No one relishes making tough decisions that are also unpopular with many, many people in Alaska.
The state Senate approves its version of a bill to use permanent fund money to fund government. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, March 15th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, despite a cold winter in Alaska, Arctic sea ice is nearing record lows again. Why?
Overall, for the Arctic, it's been a very, very warm winter.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
When you pick Click Give, you become a partner with a local nonprofit working to protect the things you love about Alaska. Whether it's the arts, our parks, or lending a hand to someone in crisis, with Pick Click Give, it's easy to find a nonprofit that shares your passion or provides programs in your neighborhood. When you apply for your PFD, say yes to sharing just $25 or more of your dividend. If you've already filed, add a donation at pfd.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by Pick Click Give.
The state Senate passed a bill today that would draw money from the Alaska Permanent Fund to pay for the state government's budget. The bill also would limit permanent fund dividends as well as the overall amount the state can spend. 13 senators voted for Senate Bill 26, while 7 voted against the measure introduced by Governor Bill Walker. It's similar to legislation the Senate passed last year, but that bill died in the House. Eagle River Republican Senator Anna McKinnon says it's a challenge to close the state's budget gap in a way that receives support from both legislative chambers and Walker. She says she would like to cut state government further before making changes to the permanent fund, but she says the state is limited in how much more it can cut.
The services in Alaska are more expensive than most places in the U.S., certainly, but even in other parts of the world.
The bill would draw 5.25% annually from the fund, with a quarter of that money going to dividends. Dividends would be set at $1,000 for the next 3 years, similar to their amount last year after Walker vetoed half of dividend funding. Under the bill, dividends are projected to go up slightly after the first 3 years. Bill supporters say it's necessary to help close the nearly $3 billion gap between the amount the state spends and the amount it raises in oil royalties, taxes, and fees. Kodiak Republican Gary Stevens notes the original ballot question that created the permanent fund said that after oil could no longer pay for government, the permanent fund would.
No one relishes making tough decisions that are also unpopular with many, many people in Alaska, but it is time to vote for what we as individuals, as elected, responsible representatives believe is best for our districts and for Alaska. It's time to support the governor's bill.
11 Republicans and 2 Democrats supported the bill, while 3 Republicans and 4 Democrats opposed it. Anchorage Democrat Bill Wilikowski opposed the bill. He says the Alaskans' ownership of the state's natural resources under the Statehood Act means the legislature shouldn't cut PFDs.
And we have a unique constitution in that regard, and a unique obligation to ensure that that money is dispersed fairly and equitably to all Alaskans.
Wasilla Republican Mike Dunleavy says he'd like to see deeper cuts to government and that the permanent fund draw in the bill is too large.
In the end, who do we want to win here? Government or the people?
It's not clear whether the House and Senate will agree on changes to the permanent fund bill. Unlike last year, the House has been debating its own permanent fund bill. But the House bill includes an income tax, which many senators oppose. In a separate bill, as part of the annual state budget, House leaders have proposed drawing more than $4 billion from the permanent fund this year, much more than the Senate bill. This would allow the House to avoid negotiating concessions with the House minority over drawing money from the Constitutional Budget Reserve. The House Finance Committee is scheduled to debate its permanent fund bill on Friday. State regulators have given preliminary approval to Hillcorp's plan to monitor the environmental impacts of the gas leak in Cook Inlet. Hilcorp, the biggest oil and gas producer in the inlet, owns a gas line that's now leaking as much as 215,000 cubic feet per day. The leak is coming from an underwater pipeline that fuels offshore oil platforms and has been ongoing since December. Heavy ice in Cook Inlet means it's currently too dangerous to send divers to fix the leak. Jeff Merrill of the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation says the monitoring will help the state learn how big of a risk the leak actually poses to the environment.
On the one hand, there's people with an environmental and wildlife interest saying, you know, the risk to wildlife is too great, you have to shut the pipeline in. And a different viewpoint is that of Hilcorp, which is saying, no, actually, the risks are quite small. The impacts are quite small.
A federal agency would make the final call on whether to shut down the line. Hilcorp confirms shutting down the gas line could forever halt oil production from the affected platforms. The company also says shutting it down could result in an oil spill because the line used to carry oil. Environmental groups dispute that claim. Meanwhile, Merrill says collecting water quality data near the gas line is especially important.
We know that methane displaces oxygen in the water column. And so if that's occurring, to what extent is that occurring? And to what extent is that occurrence impacting or potentially impacting fish and other aquatic species in the water column?
Hilcorp will also monitor for air quality, the presence of fish and wildlife, and underwater noise caused by the leak. According to Hilcorp, collecting this data will help explain if the leak is affecting Cook Inlet beluga whales, which are listed as endangered. The leak is happening within the whale's critical habitat. Neither Hilcorp nor the state could predict when ice conditions will allow divers to fix the leak. Two people have been arrested on charges stemming from a Fairbanks bar shooting that left one man dead and another seriously injured. 22-year-old Teven Davis, a soldier at Fort Wainwright, is charged with second-degree murder in the death of 27-year-old Michael Hodges of Fairbanks. Police also arrested 28-year-old Joshua Haynes on a weapons misconduct charge. He is on federal probation for a 2015 conviction for conspiracy to distribute narcotics. Police say Haynes, as a felon, is not allowed to possess a firearm and that he fired a gun inside the bar. Police say a fight began inside Bojangles' bar on September 4th and spilled into the parking lot where Hodges was shot. A second man, 25-year-old Jesse Anderson, was shot through the torso and survived. Federal prosecutors say a decision is months away on seeking the death penalty for the suspect in a Florida airport shooting rampage. Esteban Santiago of Anchorage is accused in the January 6th shooting that killed five and wounded six at Fort Lauderdale Hollywood International Airport. Prosecutors and defense attorneys for the 26-year-old Santiago said at a hearing Wednesday, the death penalty decision process has just begun. A Santiago lawyer says it will take 12 months for the defense to prepare its position on the matter. The Justice Department will make the final decision. Trial is currently set for October 2nd. Santiago's attorney also says he suffers from schizophrenia and another mental disorder, but is competent to assist in his defense and stand trial. He has pleaded not guilty to a 22-count indictment. It's been a relatively cool and snowy winter here in the interior compared with the past couple of winters. But climate experts say the Arctic has been warmer than average. They say that's why it appears this year's maximum Arctic sea ice cover, measured near the end of winter, is likely to set another record for the smallest maximum on record. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
Spring equinox is a week away, which means the time is nigh for the National Snow and Ice Data Center's annual declaration that Arctic sea ice cover has grown as much as it's going to over the past winter.
We're at about the maximum sea ice extent you'll see for the year. Usually the maximum happens around mid-March.
Mark Serez is a senior research scientist with the Snow and Ice Data Center. He says the formation of sea ice this past winter was once again sparse, due mainly to above-average air and sea surface temperatures throughout the season and again last month.
We already had a record low sea ice extent in February. We're looking at a very, very low sea ice extent ending the freeze-up season, starting the melt season.
This may seem contradictory after a week during which the mercury dropped to 30, 40, even 50 below overnight in many areas around the interior. Serez says this winter was cooler than the previous two, which set consecutive records.
But overall, for the Arctic, it's been a very, very warm winter, and you see that reflected in the very, very low sea ice levels that we have right now.
But National Weather Service climate specialist Rick Toman says it was a chilly winter for much of Alaska.
For Alaska as a whole, for the 2016-17 midwinter, say December through February period, Alaska as a whole actually very close to the long-term normal.
Except for some parts of the state. Toman says it was a much milder winter north of the Brooks Range, especially along the Arctic Ocean coast.
So as you would expect in Alaska, there's regional differences. And the North Slope in particular was quite warm this winter. Was about the 12th warmest winter for the North Slope as a whole.
Serez says it's been especially warm on the Atlantic side of the Arctic, and he expects that'll be reflected in the sea ice maximum extent map the Snow and Ice Data Center will post in the next week or so. In Fairbanks, I'm Tim Ellis.
A Kenai Peninsula Borough Assembly member is challenging a clause in a legal nonprofit's contract in order to defend the borough in an ongoing lawsuit over the assembly's invocation policy. The Peninsula Clarion reports that Assemblymember Willie Dunn of Homer filed a civil complaint asking for a temporary injunction that would allow him to publish an op-ed in local newspapers supporting an ordinance that would remove prayer from the beginning of assembly meetings. Dunn wants to publish the piece, which explains his reasoning behind introducing the ordinance, before a March 21st hearing on the ordinance. Borough attorney Colette Thompson told him the Alliance Defending Freedom, a conservative Christian nonprofit, didn't approve of Dunn's piece, and publishing it would violate a contract the borough holds with the group. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, why is all the snow disappearing even while it's still below freezing?
Even as our temperatures have stayed below freezing, we get a little bit of melting.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The Alaska Autism Resource Center presents Autism Insights, featuring a dynamic young woman with autism, Danny Bowman, who is a national speaker, advocate, and entrepreneur. Join Danny in Palmer on Thursday, March 16th, and in Sitka on Saturday, March 18th. Free and open to the public. Spaces limited. Register today. More at alaskaarc.org. This message sponsored by AARC.
March has brought sun to much of the state, but not a lot of warm temperatures. That weather combination prompted a listener to email us to ask why some ice and snow is disappearing, even though it's well below freezing. Brian Bretschneider with our Ask a Climatologist segment told Annie Fite it's not the first time he's fielded this question.
It's all about the sun. So even when it's below freezing, direct sunlight actually works to melt some of the snow. So, you know, as we get later into the season, even as our temperatures have stayed below freezing, we get a little bit of melting. And we see that reflected in the fact that, for example, we have icicles on roofs. Icicles only form when you have some melting snow and the temperature is below freezing. So the temperature does magnify the effect, but it is the sun directly hitting that snow that's causing the melting.
How much more solar energy do we have in mid-March versus late December?
Well, looking at some stations around the state that are nearby, say to Anchorage, that actually measure solar energy, in mid-March, there's about 100 times more solar energy than you would than was received in late December around the winter solstice. So that's huge. And that solar energy really works on the snow and melts it. So even if you had the same temperature, you know, in late December and versus the same temperature in mid-March, a vastly different melting environment.
And how much does the angle of the sun in the winter here compare to, like, northern cities in the lower 48?
Well, that's an interesting point, because in mid-March, say in Anchorage, the sun peaks at about 27 degrees above the horizon. That's the equivalent of what it is in, say, New York or Chicago at the winter solstice. So in those big cities, when it snows, like it's snowing this week in say, in Philadelphia, New York City, and Boston, even in the middle of winter, they get melting right away, even if it's below freezing. And this time of year, it'll melt really quick. And that explains why we have snow on the ground so much longer than those cities. You know, we have 100 and something days a year, Fairbanks 170 or 80 days a year with snow cover, and that's about the sun angle. So the sun is providing a lot of this direct melting, even with temperatures below freezing.
Brian Brettschneider is a climatologist who lives in Anchorage. He spoke with Annie Feit from Alaska's Energy Desk as part of the regular look at climate and climate change in the state. If you have a climate-related question, send an email to akenergydesk@alaskapublic.org. In an effort to figure out what's behind the mysterious decline of stellar sea lions, scientists are trying out crowdsourcing for the first time. The project is called Stellar Watch. The idea is to convince the public to comb through pictures looking for sea lions. Scientists from the Alaska Fisheries Science Center have remote cameras stationed in the western Aleutian Islands that take pictures every 5 to 20 minutes every day of the year. From last year alone, they have nearly 400,000 images. The cameras go off whether there's a sea lion present or not. Right now, there's only one question for the citizen scientists. Do you see a sea lion in the image? Biologist Katie Sweeney says this information will help scientists analyze images in a timely manner.
That's important so that we can come up with important population estimates and figure out why the stellar sea lion, which is endangered, is not recovering in the Aleutian Islands.
After they've built up a pile of pictures that have sea lions, Sweeney says they'll start another phase to the project, looking for marked sea lions. From monitoring marked animals, scientists can study sea lion movement, fertility, and lifespan. The information could help these researchers identify what's behind the animal's decline. You can find a link to Stellar Watch on our website. As this winter continues longer and snowier than those in the recent past, moose are getting cantankerous. This is a warning the Alaska Department of Fish and Game sent out in a Monday press release. Neil Barton is the AD/FNG wildlife biologist in Dillingham. He says it's important not to pester moose that are already facing environmental stressors.
This winter's been getting kind of long, and in places where the snow has piled up, you know, the moose are having to kind of work harder to get food, and you know, they're burning up their energy reserves that they have to hopefully make it through the winter with. So as some people have kind of noted, they can get kind of ornery if you're in and around moose at this time of year because they are already stressed out. You don't want to go pestering them.
Come late spring, Barton says people should be especially mindful of giving moose appropriate space.
When we get into late May when the moose are dropping calves, of course, moose are very good mothers. They're very defensive, and that's the time of year that they can be very aggressive toward whether it's a dog, a person, or whatever that happens to get close to them and their calves. So you gotta, that's the time of year you gotta really, you know, if you see an adult moose, try to avoid it because you don't want to stress them out and you don't want them to come running after you because you're getting too close to their little calves.
AD/FNG says Alaskans have reported encounters with aggressive moose from Homer to Anchorage, Palmer, and beyond in recent weeks.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight from vehicles and oversized equipment to small packages for corporations or small business. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956.
Consider Pick-Click-Give to Alaska Rural Veterinary Outreach when filing for your 2017 PFD. This nonprofit provides critically needed veterinary care to rural villages, including spay-neuter surgery, vaccines, basic wellness, and education to help reduce the overpopulation of unwanted pets, high rate of dog bites, and the spread of disease. Learn more at akrvo.org. This message sponsored by Alaska Rural Veterinary Outreach.
A group of tourists got an extra Alaska experience when a dog sled team helped pull their car out of snow in Fairbanks. The Fairbanks Daily News Miner reports Neil Eklund and his son were returning from giving a dog sled tour on the Chena River when they saw an SUV stuck in the snow on Sunday. Eklund says he had never pulled a car out with a sled before, but with his 9 dogs, he had plenty of power to free the vehicle and send the stranded tourists on their Alaskan adventure. Eklund and his son operate Skookum Expeditions. Eklund ran the Iditarod Trail sled dog race in 1981 and 83, and is now training his son, Lauro, to run the Yukon Quest and Iditarod. The top 10 teams have arrived in Nome, filling out the upper ranks of the 2017 Iditarod sled dog race. Winner Mitch Seavey won his third title on Tuesday in a record time of 8 days, 3 hours, and 40 minutes, slashing more than 7 hours off the previous record. The Seward Musher says he started the race with an aggressive schedule that his fast team eclipsed.
So that's pretty cool. The trail was a little faster and smoother than it might have been, but I really strongly believe in preparing the dogs to go do what they're going to do, and you shouldn't be really surprised at what happens.
At 57 years old, Seavey is the oldest musher to win the race, breaking the record he set in 2013 as a 53-year-old winner.
And I do feel like I'm getting younger, not older. So as long as this is the thing that interests me the most, this is probably what I'll keep doing. But at some point, there may be other things in life when I grow up, but I'm having so much fun with these dogs.
Dallas Seavey and Nicholas Petit arrived in a tight race for second and third, respectively. Norwegian Jor Olsen earned fourth place late Tuesday with his team of eight dogs. The fifth place finisher had twice that number. Jesse Royer did not drop a single team member over the 1,000-mile race and pulled onto Front Street with each of the 16 dogs she drove from the Fairbanks start.
I think running the quest beforehand had a lot to do with 11 of these finished the quest with me. So I think that had a lot to do with them. The other five I added to those 11 are all like 5- and 6-time Iditarod finishers. I have one that just finished his 7th Iditarod with me. So all 16 of these dogs are 1,000-mile finishers before I started this race. But even then, like, the good Lord blessed me with a good bunch of dogs and a lot of luck to go along to get him here.
Following Royer Wednesday morning were Wade Mars and Ray Reddington Jr. There was a race out of White Mountain for eighth place. Pete Kaiser left the checkpoint just 2 minutes ahead of Allie Zirkel. But by the time they were speeding into Nome, Zirkel had overtaken him, as she explained, just as Nome's air raid siren heralded Kaiser's ninth place arrival.
Yeah, I didn't catch him until Topcock, when we couldn't see very well. And then I rode his skirts almost all the way up Topcock, and then he stopped. He was like, okay, you can take your turn going. It's hard to drive a dog team into a 40-mile-an-hour wind.
Kaiser's finish is the best of any team from off the road system. To round out the top 10, veteran musher Paul Gebhardt notched his 8th career top 10 finish. Iditarod musher Mitch Seavey won the 2017 race in record time on Tuesday afternoon. The Seward Musher's team ran a blistering pace from Fairbanks along winding rivers, tundra, and sea ice to Nome. But as KNOM's Ben Matheson reports, the veteran musher is looking forward to achieving new levels of dog team performance in the peak of his career.
The trucks had barely finished dumping snow on Nome's Front Street for the final stretch of dog trail when Mitch Seavey roared up off the sea ice with his 11 huskies.
Way to go, Mitch!
Seavey arrived at 3:40 in the afternoon and enjoyed hugs from family and friends. Mushing is the family business for the Seaveys. His father, Dan Seavey, ran the first Iditarod and greeted him in the bright afternoon sun. Race officials draped his leaders Crisp and Pilot with harnesses of golden roses. Seavey started the race with a schedule that would bring him in under record time, but his fast team, one that he says loves speed, eclipsed even that schedule.
So that's pretty cool. The trail was a little faster and smoother than it might have been, but I really strongly believe in preparing the dogs to go do what they're going to do, and you shouldn't be really surprised at what happens.
With the victory, Seavey wins more than $70,000, a new truck, and bragging rights as a 3-time champion. And now the fastest champion in 45 years of racing. Seavey slashed 7 hours off the record set last year by his son Dallas Seavey with a run of 8 days, 3 hours, and 40 minutes. To build a team with that speed, Seavey maintains a year-round training program that keeps the athletes active in the summer and achieving winter-level workouts by fall time. He doesn't reveal details about a training regime that seems to involve running dogs at a ceiling of 9.5 to 10 miles per hour and trips to prepare for the specific rigors of racing. Seavey had a 2-hour edge on Dallas Seavey leaving White Mountain Tuesday morning, and after banking a luxurious amount of rest on the coast, His team ran a blistering pace to Nome to extend that lead by another 45 minutes on the 77 miles in from White Mountain. One of the key moves this year that helped him build a defendable gap on his competition was pushing north to Huslia to take his 24-hour break. Other top racers rested earlier in Ruby or Galena.
You know, if you're going to take a late 24, you have to get there in a hurry. You can't lose a lot of time because, you know, you have to be in position. So I felt like we came off of that late 24 with a lot more energy than teams that may have taken their long break earlier.
Speed has been the mantra since CV departed Fairbanks with 70 other mushers last week. At 57 years old, CV is the oldest musher to win the race, breaking the record he set in 2013 as a 53-year-old winner.
And I do feel like I'm getting younger, not older. So as long as this is the thing that interests me the most, this is probably what I'll keep doing. But at some point, there may be other things in life when I grow up, but I'm having so much fun with these dogs, and we've turned a corner like there's this whole new world of things that we can do. And what if we could go even faster? What if we could run the Iditarod on a good trail as fast as a North American? Who knows?
That is the Open North American Championships, a sprint mushing race. This is now the sixth year in a row in which Dallas or Mitch Seavey has won the Iditarod. As the elder Seavey this time ran away with the title, the real race unfolding over the Topcock Hills and Safety Sound was for second place, as Girdwood musher Nicholas Petit and Dallas Seavey battled for silver. Seavey says he spotted the team in pursuit as they neared Nome.
Kept checking, I saw no sign of him. And then stopped for another snack break at the top of Cape Nome, and after I take off, I look back and he's right behind me. He's sneaky, I'll give him that.
Petit cut an already thin 13-minute edge to less than 5 minutes in Nome, bringing the two teams side by side underneath the burled arch. It was here that Petit returned CV's veterinarian logbook, a piece of required equipment, after he lost it at the safety checkpoint. In Nome, CV and Petit joked about the race's sportsmanship award.
I appreciate it. Thank you. That was very kind of you.
No problem. Remember that when we talk about sportsmanship?
Both Dallas CV and Petit joined the winner with times below the old speed record set a year ago. Following his best finish ever, Petit says his team is just getting started.
They're amazing, and they're just 2 and 3 year old dogs, and so watch out, CVs, we're gonna get you.
Norwegian Jor Olsom arrived in fourth place, while Jesse Royer drove her full string of 16 dogs to claim fifth place. I'm Ben Matheson in Nome.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. You can also follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Andrew Kitchenman in Juneau, Elizabeth Harbaugh and Annie Fight in Anchorage, Tim Ellis in Fairbanks, Zoe Sobel in Unalaska, Ben Matheson and Zachariah Hughes in Nome, and Avery Lill in Dillingham. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Sean Dugan is our editor and producer. Wesley Early is our web editor. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight, from vehicles and oversized equipment to small packages for corporations or small business. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956.
When you pick Click Give, you become a partner with a local nonprofit working to protect the things you love about Alaska. Whether it's the arts, our parks, or lending a hand to someone in crisis, with Pick Click Give, it's easy to find a nonprofit that shares your passion or provides programs in your neighborhood. When you apply for your PFD, say yes to sharing just $25 or more of your dividend. If you've already filed, add a donation at pfd.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by Pick Click Give. The Alaska Autism Resource Center presents Autism Insights, featuring a dynamic young woman with autism, Danny Bowman, who is a national speaker, advocate, and entrepreneur. Join Danny in Palmer on Thursday, March 16th, and in Sitka on Saturday, March 18th. Free and open to the public. Spaces limited. Register today. More at alaskaarc.org. This message sponsored by AARC.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.